Because you missed 80%. So, kind of a tough time coming up with some ideas. I hope this isn't too discombobulated, but it was some of the things I think I wanted to bring up. This is going to be entitled God's Mercy and Grace. And just looking, to realize the sheer magnitude of God, I believe it was Genesis 2, chapter 4, started talking about, I better get on my glasses or I can't even tell what chapter I'm in. Starts talking about all the different names or titles of God. And there's umpteen different ones. Some of them I can't even pronounce, but there was at least 16 of them in some footnotes that Dakes had. And they dealt with God being the eternal creator, the Lord our sovereign, the Lord will see or provide, also the healer, the Lord our righteousness, our sanctifier, Lord of hosts, the Lord is present, the Most High, my shepherd, our God, thy God, my God. There's different names for all these things. But it just shows how all-encompassing God is. And when you just to get started, chapter 1 through chapter 2 of Genesis details the highlight of just things getting started with God. This isn't a God like in Greek mythology that just came along and kind of took over a spot or represented one faction. This is the God of the universe. This is God the Creator. He created earth and heaven. He also created light and divided it from darkness. And it wasn't until I was reading this, you always thought, okay, daytime, nighttime. But they were talking about there's two kinds of light. I mean, even went in that detail. Anyone that's been in a blacked out room knows what total darkness is and total feeling of, just a loss of sensation you have. They used to do psychological experiments with people in what they called sensory deprivation tanks. And it was totally, totally dark. You were floating in water to eliminate being without feeling. And some really crazy things and hallucinations would happen to these people. But in this, God created the light and divided it from the darkness, but he still gave you light in the darkness, if that makes sense. It's not total darkness, because total darkness represented judgment. But this was just to separate the night and the day. And then he created the land and separated from the waters. He created small things like grass, herbs, trees, created the seasons for us so that everything would have a cycle. And then he created the stars. Everyone, astronomers talk about them, but it's how many millions of years, light years away they are. And it's kind of like, just take it for what it is. It said God created it, believe it. If you believe in creation, that's not so hard to believe. He created animals. And then he created man and woman. Now, to show his grace and mercy, even from the get-go, we were the second time around. But after creation, it wasn't that, God gave them everything in the Garden of Eden. And what do they do? The first chance they get, they listen to this snake that convinces Eve to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That was the one thing you couldn't add. Now, anyone that raises kids, you say, well, that's just terrible. They were adults. How many times have you raised a kid and you can say you can have anything you want in this house, just don't touch this? And what does that kid do? He's going to wait till you turn your back and he's going to run for that thing you told him not to. You can try to tell him, no, it's going to, I'm going to spank you. I'm going to ground you. And it's kind of like, okay. Yeah, right. And they run over for it. One of our boys was that way. He was Craig's brothers, sometimes Craig, but mainly him. He was an ornery little sucker. His grandfather told him not to mess with wires behind the stereo, and lo and behold, he went back there and did it. And we'd tell him not to do things, and you could just see in his eyes, you just knew, you know, turn your back, and he'd do it. But even after, you know, and God used to walk with Adam and Eve. I mean, how awesome that would be to actually be walking with God and conversing with God. And we're all going to get to do that. But these guys, I mean, Adam and Eve, they were doing it, you know, in real time back then. They didn't have to wait till they died and went to heaven. They had it. But after they ate from the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they hid from God. You know, just like a little kid, it's just like they thought that would work. We'll hide from God and he won't know what happened. You know, God called to Adam, and Adam answered, but he said that he was naked and hid himself. He was ashamed. And, you know, of course, God, you know, how many times we set the kids up, we go, well, what'd you do? And, well, ate of the tree that we weren't supposed to eat of. And, but just like today, Adam didn't want to take responsibility. You know, he said, well, that woman you gave me made me do it. And then when he asked Eve, she goes, that snake made me do it. The serpent made me do it. And I hear this all the time on my job. I'm sure you guys hear it all the time in your jobs. You know, I'll cut people mercy out on the road if they just fess up to what they did. But when they start blaming something else, it's just kind of like, now you're a slow learner. I'm going to give you a little reminder. But and it's just like my, you know, now we know what God's judgment was, but even though he told them, for surely you will die, and it did. They did eventually suffer a natural death. But he was still showing restraint for everything he'd given them because he did let Adam and Eve live. And he did provide them with a means to live. You know, from his creation, they could still go out and feed themselves. They could clothe themselves. Innocent animals died so that they had skins to clothe themselves. And there was also the agony of childbirth, but that was just, you know, they were still allowed to live, still allowed to function. And another case of mercy was God dealing with Cain. Even though Cain slew Abel, he still let Cain live. And this was even before, you know, Christ's atonement. You know, so God has shown that he's had mercy all the way from the get-go. God's mercy to Noah and his family. If you go to Genesis 6, chapters 5 through 13. Just go ahead and read this. And God saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every imagination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And he repented the Lord that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him at his heart. And the Lord said, I will destroy man whom I created from the face of the earth, both man and beast and the creeping thing and the fowls of the air, for it repenteth me that I have made them. But Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And these are the generations of Noah. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. And Noah walked with God. And Noah begat three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, or however you say that. The earth also was corrupt before God, and the earth was filled with violence. And God looked upon the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted his way upon the earth. And God said unto Noah, the end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence through them. And behold, I will destroy them with the earth. But he also made a provision, because Noah was righteous. He made a provision to save Noah and his family. And it said, verse 8 said, Noah found grace in the eyes of the Lord. And in the Dake's Bible, it was saying grace or favor was used 38 times in the Old Testament, proving that it was not just a New Testament doctrine. Even before Christ, God has continued to show mercy with his creation all through the Bible. It's much more so in the New Testament, but it's still present in the Old. All through the Bible, God has been a hands-on father. He's desired to walk with his children, which were his creation, and fellowship with them, much as any parent, especially fathers, want to do with their own kids. However, when needed, the hand of correction is also used, as well as judgment. Now, we move on to Abraham, and that's I like Genesis. I mean, I like a lot of the old stuff there, not because of just hellfire and brimstone, because it's not, but I do like the book of, just starting with Genesis and a lot of the old ones. Now, Abraham, Genesis 12, 1 through 13, if you just want to turn to there. Okay, starting with verse 1. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great. And thou shalt be a blessing. And I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curseth thee. And in thee shall all families of the earth be blessed. So just with Abraham and his righteousness, God made a great nation. That'd be the nation of Israel. And it said, bless those that bless his nation and curse those that curse his nation. This continues to this day. In the 20th century, Israel has been unique in that it's been a nation, a religion, and also a race combined in one, the Jewish nation. And even the Jews living here and living in other countries, I'm sure a good part of them want that desire to return back to Israel and to be part of that nation again. That, I look at the Germany, you know, a case in point back in World War II. I think Germany was defeated in World War II primarily because of its persecution of the Jews. The war machine that Hitler had amassed was incredible. Their equipment was cutting edge. Their technology was cutting edge. The only thing that was hindering him was persecution of the Jews because and also it helped that he was slightly nuts. But I also think that was part of God's judgment on him, because if he hadn't alienated the Jews, a lot of the Jewish scientists near the end of the war were choosing who to go with, whether they went with Russia or whether they went with the Allies. Fortunately, we've got some excellent Jewish scientists. And I mean, it's just a classic case. The Jews, when they put their mind to it, have been a blessed people from the get-go. They have always excelled and been able to accomplish great things. And I think that's what gave us the technology as far as weaponry, as far as the space race, and so on. But I do believe that if he hadn't persecuted them, that things would have turned out totally different in World War II. I do think Hitler might have been able to pull it off. And you can't say, well, we all knew about the Jews. A lot of the Allies didn't know what was going on with the persecution of the Jews till after Germany had fallen or till after they had invaded it. And then a lot of these soldiers were stunned when they came upon the death camps because they didn't realize what was going on with the Jews. So they were fighting a battle against Germany, but I do think that things got turned in our favor partly because of the persecution of the Jews. And then once Israel was refounded as a nation, the Arabs have tried numerous times. You've got, you know, what do you have, 1,000 to 1 Arabs over there against the Jews? And they can't snuff that little country out. You know, that'd be like us going up against, New Hampshire? And, you know, they still hold them off. They have tried, and they just can't do it. And I think, it's part of that, bless those who bless thee and curse those who curse you. And I think that's what happens with Israel. And so far the U.S. has been on the side of Israel. And, you know, we have, because our religion is founded off of the Jewish faith, I think we have a real bond with them. And as long as we keep that, you know, I think that's going to be good. But I don't know what to expect We've been a God-fearing nation since our inception, and we've accomplished a lot. And we've been a strong ally of Israel, but we just need to keep praying that we continue to be that. Because right now, and it's not just due to the political views that I hold, but right now our administration is turning its back on Israel. It snubbed yet Netanyahu, and he's over here for a visit. It has endorsed the Arabs and the Muslim faith. And we're just setting this country up, I think, you know, for, if not a total fall, we're setting it up for a great setback until we get our act together and start bringing it back around. But getting back into, not messing with... I just had some examples of not messing with Israel and how the Jews have been chosen. David and Goliath, by all means, David should have been beaten, but God was there. And I don't think it's just because David made a lucky shot. When he threw that stone, it said the stone went and sunk into his skull. Well, I don't know how fast you can throw these rocks, but I'm sure God had a little propulsion behind it, you know, to sink into a giant's head. And then you also had the walls of Jericho. Just by singing and praise, marching around the walls, they fell down. And then you had Gideon and his 300 men. And, all throughout there, Israel's been blessed, and God has shown his power and his grace. Let's see here. Okay, I covered that. On God's image and man's image, this is where I want to tie it together. Fathers need to portray themselves. A long time ago, I heard someone say, and may have been my wife nagging me, I don't know, that fathers need to portray themselves and conduct themselves as close to God and his attributes as he can. Because your kids... right now, you know, especially when they're little, they're not perceiving, you know, God and all this, but they are going to learn about God and his attributes through you. You know, they're going to learn about your love. They're going to learn about your discipline and the judgment. But they're also going to realize about grace and mercy. And remember how, you know, that especially bears true with the fathers, not so much the mothers, but the fathers. Because remember how many times you get in trouble, and I didn't mind so much if my mom got after me. But I hated to hear those words, wait till your father gets home. Because then it was like, hey, this isn't the mercy seat, this is just judgment day. And usually I paid dearly for it when dad was told. And I tried to make that apply to my kids as well. They'd pull stuff when I'd be on a bank trip, and I'd just say, well, wait till I get home. And I made it a case of my word. They could mess up on a Monday, and I wouldn't get home till Friday, but they still paid with a spanking. They still got it. You know, the judgment was there. And then I didn't hold it over their heads forever and ever, but they still paid. God's attributes, go to Psalms 86, 15 through 17. But thou, O Lord, art a God full of compassion and gracious, long-suffering, and plenteous in mercy and truth. O turn unto me and have mercy upon me. Give thy strength unto thy servant, and save the son of thy handmaid. Show me a token for good, that they which hate me may see it and be ashamed, because thou, Lord, hath holpen and comforted me. Well, I think I read that, right? Yep. Yeah, I got that. Mainly, he's full of compassion, he's gracious, he's long-suffering. Israel in the wilderness, classic example of that. Bunch of complaining brats that he provided for. He got them out of slavery. He parted the Red Sea for them. He gave them manna every day. And when that wasn't enough, he gave them quail every day. He provided everything they needed, and they still weren't happy. And I'm sure you've all had known kids or had kids that were kind of that way. But he was still long-suffering, and he provided and cared for them and still did everything that he could for them. He got them to the promised land. And he had plenty of mercy and plenty of truth. So the responsibility of parents, especially the fathers, is strive to be as godlike as possible. And your example carries more impact on that child than you realize. And not so much, you know, well, just the way you conduct yourself. There's a lot of times I didn't think that a lot of the hard work I did, you know, I didn't think some of my kids appreciated it, but they're all hard workers now. They all realize, you know, nothing was ever handed to them, and they know that they don't sit on their can and get it handed to them. They know that they have to work for it. And they were all trained about God, and they all, you know, were all saved. And, you know, so what they do with all that knowledge is up to them. But just do your best to imitate God and his attributes to your children and others. So, like I said, it was a little disjointed, but there's some things I wanted to cover and things I wanted to mention. So, that's pretty much it. The end. I'm pretty good cut and dry.